Hi everyone, welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 121, and we're, what?
Huh?
I said hi.
Oh.
Yeah. Podcast is already screwed.
Stella.
You just totally fucked with my flow, man.
That most you...
I'm sorry, I didn't, no, we weren't allowed to say hi.
That most useful of vocal implements, the stealth hi.
Yes, indeed. I was like, what did he just say? I couldn't even decipher it. I guess that's the intro to the show. Hey, everybody. James, do you have anything you'd like to say at this juncture?
So this week I've been playing.
No. I mean, in terms of, like, welcomings, good tidings to all men.
No.
Hell no.
And really women too, if you want to swing that way. But...
Oh, dear.
This podcast
was it a weird tiding swung one way or the other, Johnny?
You know, good tidings is like an old-fashioned biblical kind of thing you would say. Like, joy to the world, good
Back
tidings
when they spoke
to all
English
men.
In the Bible.
Dickensian even.
Tidings,
I think.
Yes, yes. Good tidings to all men. I was just playing.
Here.
Can we start over?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, we can't.
You're the host. You can do whatever you like. Really?
I know you can.
Doesn't mean we have to play along, but he can do it.
The bad thing about podcasting is that the listeners can't see when we're blushing or when, you know, when we regret things that we've said. Or so we just sound super overconfident and unabashed about everything, and we come off as like just, you know, just dicks. And we're really not. We're all nice people.
So, Johnny, is this whole stream of thought going back to your whole Magic the Gathering thing? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Okay.
I'm proud of Magic the Gathering.
John, after going through the, you know, Eye of Judgment,
yeah.
Your room to talk is completely annihilated.
That's true. Yeah. I thought I would use what little bit I had left.
You have outdone Johnny by buying a game that not only do you have to buy virtual cards.
That's right, you have to buy the shit twice.
Paper counterparts.
Hey, look,
just to play with them.
I only have the game because I was buying it with the camera. All right, there you go.
Uh-huh.
If you want my alibi, there it is.
All the card packs, haven't you?
Can you imagine 10-year-old John Lindemann coming home and saying, "Mom, look at this new game I bought, and I can't wait until tomorrow when I buy it again so I can play it." That would have gone over really well.
John Lindemann holding a TG-16, wondering where all the games are.
Yeah. China Warrior.
John, did you have a super? John, did you have a super graphics? Because I've heard you bring it up before.
No.
He wanted one.
You wanted one. Okay.
Yeah, I also wanted a Neo Geo. I mean, I was young and silly, so there you go.
So you wanted your hot dog completely covered?
Yes, I did. Completely.
When I was a kid, I always told my friends that I would love to get a Neo Geo, but that I would never actually buy one, and that the only way I would ever actually get one is if I went on that game show where at the end of it, you just got to run around and basically grab as many games as you could and put them in some kind of shopping cart, and then whatever you grab, or no, you stuck them to your body with Velcro. Do you remember this?
Was that
the
one?
Neo Geo weighs way too much to stick to your body with Velcro.
Was that the one?
Those big ones, they had to actually carry it. But all the games had Velcro spots on them, and they would just attach them. And they always – there was some Genesis game called Nectaris or Sectaris or something. And they seemed to – it seemed like every single kid on that show got a copy of that game, even if they didn't want it. It would just – they would just rub up against it, and it would attach themselves.
God,
because...
get this piece of shit away from me.
Yeah. You guys don't remember this show? I think it came on USA or something. It was like the first
game. Are you sure
first
you're
show...
talking about Supermarket Sweep over there?
No, it was similar, though. It was kind of like a kid's video game version of that.
Was it,
but, yeah,
was it Funhouse?
It was before Nick Arcade.
It wasn't Funhouse.
No, Funhouse is cool, but yeah. No, it wasn't Funhouse. Remember J.D. Roth?
Yes, oh I'm just looking at his Wikipedia entry right now.
Oh.
I'm like, you my boy, J.D.? Totally remember J.D. Roth, man.
This podcast is about Nintendo.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, okay, we do this thing called New Business where we talk about, like, new gaming stuff that's been happening to us lately. So, John, actually, I have you to go first if you have anything to say.
Yeah, a little bit. I finally beat Grand Theft Auto 4, thank God.
Oh,
cool. Which was actually a real that game is. It's, I find it funny that game got like 10 out of 10 You know,
yeah,
when
I wouldn't
when
have given
released.
Anything like that based on what I've played.
No, I mean, I will say this. I mean, it's the best Grand Theft Auto game so far, right? But it has all of the same flaws that all of the other Grand Theft Auto games have,
well,
like
swimming.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, not beyond stuff like that. I'm talking like design issues, like where you have these really long missions, especially near the end of the game, that take you a good half an hour. And if you don't beat the entire mission, you go all the way back to the very beginning.
Sweet!
I mean, it's just stuff like that, and the fact that a lot of times, you know, especially at the end of the game when you open up the entire map, you have to drive halfway across the map to find the person that gives you a mission. Then you have to drive all the way across the map. It's like the driving. The driving is equivalent to sailing in Wind Waker to me. It's just... I mean,
well, no. I think it's much worse, actually.
Yeah,
you have to do it more often. And I think the biggest problem for me is that there's so many missions that are practically impossible unless you have full health and full body armor.
Exactly.
And every time you fail a mission, you know, you die. That means you have to not only drive back to the mission to restart it, but before that, you have to drive back to one of the three weapon shops in the entire game.
Yes.
And buy your armor, and then maybe even go to a restaurant and refill your health. And it turns a 15-minute mission into an hour per attempt, and it drives me fucking nuts.
Yeah.
It's like, why can't they just refill your armor when you die?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like part of the game. Why can't I just pay you $20,000 to have permanent armor?
Yeah.
Because I would totally pay that, in-game money, of course, but I would totally pay that rather than have to drive back to the fucking gun store
DLC.
Every single time to buy more body armor, because the game is virtually impossible without it.
Yeah, well, the thing is, a lot of the longer missions, pretty much the only way you're going to beat them is through trial and error. Because, you know, eventually, like, you do it enough times and you find out where all the guys are, you know, what the best way is to pick them off, you know, especially, like, when you go up against these massive armies of people. Like, very rarely will you ever beat a mission, like the later missions, the first time through. And so the thing is, my problem with that is that, you know, there's this huge element of trial and error involved, but there's nothing there to make it more convenient for you to deal with that trial and error, you know, aspect of it. So by the end of it, I was just like, you know, I think the high scores it gets are probably more because of the scope that they did with the game, like the scope of the game and just... everything that they did to make this actually like a real living city or feel like a real living city.
Let's not kid ourselves. It's also because of the name of the
game. True. And actually, it's interesting because it goes...
I have to say, I really preferred San Andreas. So, I mean, you know, I haven't finished 4, but I've played it a lot. And I got to the very last mission in San Andreas. And overall, I just felt like it was more fun. It's a little less serious.
Mm-hmm.
And, the world is more interesting to explore. Like, I don't find that I'm really exploring, Liberty City in GTA 4. Like, I'm basically going where they tell me to go.
Yeah.
But I don't find the city that interesting. I mean, it may be realistic, but it's not fun. It's not fun to run around and look for things. Whereas in San Andreas, you know, I mean, for one thing, it had the planes, which was my favorite thing in any GTA game, and I'm really sad they took that out. But I mean, that, you know, the helicopters are fine in GTA 4, but there's just nothing... to me, there's just not that much motivation to, like, go and do fun things. Like, there's that whole island with the Statue of Freedom or whatever,
yeah.
And I haven't even been to it. Like, I just don't feel like if I went there, it would be satisfying. Whereas in all the other GTA games, that would have been the first thing I went to, is like, let's go explore this island that I have no legitimate reason to go to.
Yeah.
Right? Because it looks like a fun place to go and see what's there. And in this one, I'm just not feeling that. It just hasn't captured that fun aspect to me at all.
No, I mean, for me with the story, I mean, I'm actually glad that I have the story out of the way, because now that I feel like I can actually go in there and treat it like a sandbox game and have some fun, you know, mess some stuff up. But the problem with it is I also feel like I've done that in every single other Grand Theft Auto game that I've ever played. Like, you know, so what if I get like a 6-star wanted, you know, rating and the FBI comes after me? Well, that's what's happened in every single Grand Theft Auto game, so, you know, it doesn't really hold a lot of appeal.
They haven't really pushed forward in that sense, and that's the part you like.
Yep.
It seems like with this one, they really tried to push forward and make advancements in the part of the game that people like the least, which is like the story and doing the missions.
Yeah, I
you
mean,
know, like
I also
giving
do have
you
a
reason to do missions rather than it be this spastic. I mean, San Andreas, the story is total ridiculous bullshit.
Yeah.
Know? he ends up breaking into a secret base and stealing a rocket pack. I mean, it's fun. I miss that aspect of it, but it's silly. And GTA 4 is clearly about storytelling. They're trying to tell this strong narrative, and that's fine. But
yeah.
To me, that should have been the lowest on the priority list of things to fix.
Do you think that actually mostly paid off in the good review scores? That the intent and the ambition is actually, in that regard, is what earned it the high praise, and in that sense, it was worthwhile.
I think so. I think so to a degree, because I think people were so used to the story being crappy that just the fact that now it has a competent, not an amazing story, a competent story, people are like, wow, this is amazing. But I actually have some beef with some of the stories. I mean,
but see, once again, I think just having the name makes having a competent story good enough.
This is a really nice follow up to our discussion last week, mm-hmm. and I don't want to retread on that too much, but I don't know, John, having beaten 4 now, are you interested in the DS game that's coming out soon, Chinatown Wars?
I don't know, because
it's very different, but...
All right, John, basically you're... just said, fuck no.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's... Because that's the thing, because it's actually... It's like an overhead view, sort of. Kind of isometric, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's 3D isometric, though, so it's not like...
Well, I mean, I wasn't too interested in a lot of the PS2 ones either. Like, really, like, I beat the first one, I beat Grand Theft Auto 3, and I played
the first three.
Well, the first 3D one. Yeah.
No, he's right, the first three.
Yeah. And I played San Andreas quite deep, but, I mean, with San Andreas, I got kind of sick of it. And with Grand Theft Auto 4, it was different enough to make me keep playing. Like, there was enough stuff. Like, I guess in that sense, the story was kind of a hook for me because it was sort of interesting. But with the DS one, I don't know. I would have to wait for reviews to see exactly how good it is.
I'm the same. I'm really skeptical of it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge Grand Theft Auto fan by any means. I like the series. I don't love it, you know.
Well, so. I have to say, I'm really looking forward more to the follow-up to 4 than I was 4. Even before I got 4, I'm still kind of looking forward to the next game after that, because I wasn't a huge fan of GTA 3. Like, I never owned it, but a lot of my friends did, and I got to play quite a bit of it. And I wasn't, like, a huge, huge fan of it. I thought it was really promising. But for me, when the series got fun was with Vice City. That's the first one I owned, and that's still my favorite. And I feel like if they take all the advancements that they made in 4 and now introduce a little bit more lighthearted story and more actual, like, fun exploration and just more elements that kind of grab you in rather than go for super realism all the time, then and they put it in a little bit more of a kind of a joyful location, because Liberty City is, like, fucking depressing.
Yeah.
I don't really want to – that's not really a place I want to hang out, you know? Whereas Vice City is way more fun. It's Miami in the 80s, you know? Let's go do lines of coke. So I'm kind of hoping that they take that tack in the follow-up to 4, because that appeals to me a lot more.
Yeah, for me, I really want them to, you know, streamline the mission, because I feel like in the actual design of the gameplay, like the mission-based gameplay – I just feel like that's the one part of the game that they should be streamlining and focusing on the most, but instead they're just content to kind of rehash the same, go talk to this guy, go do this, go kill him, go do that, and repeat.
Exactly.
And they do that like 100 times through the game, and it's just like, by the end of it, I'm just like, I just want to get these fucking missions over with. I don't enjoy
them.
You
just shot him. So. You just shot everybody they told you to go see.
Yep.
Okay, well... Do you have any other games before we move on, John?
The only other thing, I actually did pick up Warhammer Online just because I was curious about it, and I'm actually really enjoying that. I don't really know how much I really want to go into it, but it's pretty cool. It's not, I mean, I was always curious about World of Warcraft, but I never really decided to jump into it, but Warhammer Online, it's actually very easy to pick up and play, and I think it's one of the reasons why I never kind of went with an MMORPG is because I thought it would be a huge time sink. And with Warhammer Online, you really don't have to get sucked into any, like, massive, you know, 2-hour missions or anything like that if you don't want to. It's completely up to you.
Oh,
and you
sounds
can do
nice.
Yeah, I mean, and you can do player versus player. Like, you can join into big battles, or you can go off on your little side quests, or you can join, like, public quests. So it's really good. So anybody that likes MMORPGs, I would highly recommend it.
Mopagers, yes.
You know, the weird thing about Warhammer, I don't play any of these games, but just, you know, kind of looking at it from afar, it seems stylistically almost identical to WoW. I mean, it's like orcs and elves and magicians and you know, swords and shields, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty much the same kind of universe, the same kind of style, isn't
it? It's to a certain degree,
but it's a little darker.
Yeah, it's darker and probably a little grittier. I mean, I know that one of the things, some reviews I read of it said that, you know, World of Warcraft is probably a little bit more cartoony. Not that it is cartoony, but it's just its style is more. I don't know. It's less. It's you're right. I mean, it's less dark than Warhammer Online is. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not talking purely in graphics, but I don't know. To me, just aesthetically, Warhammer, and I mean in terms of the story and the kinds of characters there are and everything, it just seems like really too close to home. To WoW, for me, for there to be a big difference. And I guess maybe they just figure, you know, people are used to the fantasy setting, so let's just stick with that, or let's get a license like Warhammer that's already there. But, you know, I guess I don't know much about Warhammer, but isn't there like Warhammer 30,000 that takes place way in the future? Like, to me, that would be a far more interesting kind of setting for an MMO.
Yeah,
or even even Star Wars, the new Star Wars MMO that they just announced with BioWare, where it's going to be like, you know, like 3,000 years before Star Wars, but it's definitely completely different than WoW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I think with Warhammer, I think that they were trying to kind of up the ante on World of Warcraft, and because I mean, if you go in there, I mean, they're definitely, I mean, you'll see it just in the chats that go on. You'll see people that have come over from World of Warcraft. So I think what they were trying to do was take kind of that World of Warcraft model, add stuff. Like, I think one of the things that World of Warcraft doesn't really have is Warhammer has like the realm versus realm stuff on every single server. So like on every single server, you can go on a quest where you jump into a big battle where it's, you know, the good guys, like good versus evil. And so you're playing other players, but there's like, you're playing 50 people against 50 people. And I think in World of Warcraft, I think that they actually have specific servers that you, like, that's all you can do on them. Whereas in Warhammer, I think you can do that on every single server. So there's little things like that where I think they're trying to hook people that maybe had some sort of beef with World of Warcraft, and they were like, yeah, you know, maybe I'm kind of sick of it. So they're trying to get people to kind of migrate over to something that's maybe a little bit different, maybe a little bit better in some ways.
Pay structure. Go into it.
The pay structure, it's subscription, of course, and it is $15 a month.
Too much.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
it's 15. Too much.
Still, yeah. I know that's the same as well, but it's just way too much.
Yeah.
And how much was the game?
The game, well, I got the collector's
one. It ought to be fucking free if you're paying $15 a month. That's my opinion on it.
It's. I mean, it's like any other PC game. It's $50. I got the collector's one.
And can you do anything without paying a subscription?
No. I don't believe so.
Ridiculous.
I don't believe
so.
Yeah. But it's
it
a
really
fucking
is.
Line.
I mean, that's
it's a
the
cash
main
cow.
Thing. If they, and we're going to talk about MMOs in listener mail, but if you ask me, like, what is the main thing that they have to do to get you to play an MMO, I'd say they got to make them
free.
Cheaper. They got to make it
for
at
most
least
people, yeah.
cheaper, if not free.
Yeah.
And to me, they've got a long way to go before. I mean, you can say WoW is mass market, but relative I don't know. I mean, it's in the world of games, yes. In the world of entertainment, I don't know. I mean, 7 million people watch a TV show and it almost gets canceled, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
so
they say Warhammer has 750,000 subscribers already, so there's a big market for it. But the thing is, I think
I'm sure they're profitable. They're just they're not going to get me to pay that shit.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's my point is the fact that they're looking for people to migrate over. But that's what I'm saying though. They're getting people to migrate over, and you know, and there's like a finite amount of people that are going to pay that kind of money. So.
Sure, yeah. But I mean, if their ambition is limited to a subset of the WoW audience, I think they're really not trying very hard. I mean, if their goal is to make a game that's a lot like WoW, but we tweaked these 10 things to make it better than WoW, and it looks a lot like WoW, and it costs the same, and we're hoping to get some people who play WoW to play this instead, that's pretty fucking pitiful. I mean, that just sounds like a pathetic business model to me. A pathetic game design. I don't know. I mean, I know I'm criticizing. I haven't even played it. I'll never play it.
Yeah.
But
that's just kind of my general
philosophy on that stuff.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, what you're essentially paying for is effectively endless content to a certain degree. I mean, you can there's like 50 servers, and all those servers have quests. I mean, the world is massive. So, And also, you know, it's very obvious that they're recouping money up front. So
yeah.
I mean, because I'm sure that, like, if you hop in there and you see, like, how big the scope of it, you're like, wow, this must have cost an absolute ton of money to make. So.
Sure, but so did GTA 4, and it cost $60, period. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's probably less than that now, you know, market value.
No, it's still $60.
But you're sure not paying a subscription. I know it's a little different, but
yeah,
not different enough for me to pay $15 a month. Okay, we got to move on. James, do you mind going next?
All right, so.
Do you have anything?
I do. Okay. I went on a mild spending spree this week, very mild. And games, it's not really relevant because by the time this comes out, the deal will almost certainly be over. But
I don't know, man. You've been pretty fast lately.
Sunday the 1st of November, it'll be over. They are running a deal where if you buy two used games, you get a third one of equal or lesser value free. So I went and made my 360 collection go from two games to five. And, well, you know, money's tight, man. Money's tight.
Yeah, I have four. So.
And I got a year subscription to Game Informer for a grand total of $40.
I wouldn't pay for a subscription to that.
No, but... Nice.
By the time you buy that much stuff, it's pretty much free.
Yeah, it was. I think I paid $5 total for the subscription, if you count the discounts it caused the games to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At that point.
And you'll get more discounts later. So, I mean, if you make a large enough purchase all at once, then the magazine's pretty much free.
Yeah, but that's not a bad deal to come out with. And I got Assassin's Creed.
Ooh, good choice.
Crackdown.
Good choice.
And... You're not going to say good choice this one. NCAA Basketball, the second most recent one.
I'm indifferent.
Indifferent, yeah.
I just don't care.
I'm just going to do... I haven't played Assassin's
I'm sure it's a fine
yet.
Game, but...
No, not really.
I just don't care.
It's not. Nice, that's how I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to do one game a week.
I'm sure it's a fine game, you dumbass.
rationing new business times really are tough.
Not really.
But I want to fully devote my efforts to discussing one game.
We're on the game stamp program.
This week it's please donate your used games so that we don't have to do this anymore. This game ends I believe it's 08. NCAA Basketball 08.
Let's make this quick.
Biggest issue. I'm only going to talk about one game. Jeez. The biggest issue I have with the game is the absolutely abysmal menu screen. Listen, how do you mess up a menu screen? Well,
Boom blocks.
Yeah, it is so terrible in the menu. It's mind blowing. So I'm sitting there. I'm going, okay. So you turn the game on. Suddenly you're in a quick match. I'm like, how the hell did this happen? I don't want to be in a quick match. So
that's
I start
how quick it is.
Trying to get out of it. I couldn't figure out how to get out of it and change modes. So I ended up having to start a quick match, pause the game, quit the quick match, and then pick the new game type I wanted. It is such a fucking clusterfuck just to get the game started. It is
so. This is a basketball game, right?
Yes.
Does it play basketball?
It does once you figure out how to start the damn thing.
So is it good?
It's I'm consistently getting my ass beat.
It's pretty good.
Well, I guess. The issue I have with it is I thought I knew basketball pretty well. Apparently, by this game's standards, I'm a fucking basketball moron. Because I'm, like, coming through. I'm like, okay, I can do this. Oh, God, what just happened? And suddenly I'm down 30 points. I don't know what the hell's going on. But what I don't like is that their franchise mode, I think they call it legacy mode, is that you can't pick what team you want to coach. You have to pick between, you know, really bottom dwellers. So I ended up picking, like, Maryland Eastern Shore, which I only picked them because
Or you could
I
go
saw...
with Auburn.
No, not even Auburn. Like, it's like MEAC teams and, which, if you don't know anything about basketball, MEAC is fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And so it's... I apologize to any MEAC fans out there. All six of you. But...
Is that related to ENIAC?
No, that's a D2 division, I believe.
No, ENIAC was the world's first computer.
No, there is an NEAC conference, I believe.
I tried to make a joke, awesome, and you words. Actually had a serious answer. Oh, man, that sucks.
That was too awesome.
But, so I ended up with this really awful team, and I can't win any games. But the worst part was I picked them basically because I saw them live last year, and I forgot. And the reason I saw them live was because they played my alma mater first game of the season, and I forgot how much of a fucking runaway that was. Well, I accurately recreated the game and being absolutely annihilated in a 10-minute game by about 30 points. I was like, good God. I'm convinced the only way to win the game is to simply not shoot at all and just hope the other team doesn't make any shots. Just sit there and go, okay, I'm not going to shoot. And just let the shot clock run out. Because it's just so hard to score any points. I'm not sure if it's supposed to be that hard or if it's just that it's a user interface issue, which this game has a plethora of. Like, the font is all really, really tiny.
Maybe you can just take this back and exchange it for something else.
Yeah, well, it was my free game.
It's like within 7 days, right? I mean,
I think so. It was my free game, so I'm not particularly bothered by the loss of it being.
It's an opportunity cost. If you could have had another free game that's much better, then you still got robbed.
Yeah, well, I'm going to give it a...
I mean, you robbed yourself by picking a basketball game, which you should know better.
The funny thing is... I had the NCAA football game for years. I bought it for like $3 back when it was 2 years old. And, you know, I had fun with that. I mean, I probably put 60 hours over 3 years into that game for $3. Not bad. But this game, it's so different. And I had NBA Street, which I guess I can't compare the two because one's a serious game where you have to weigh the merits of a pick and roll against a triangle two defense.
Yeah, and the other one's fun.
And the other one, you cause the backboard to explode when you slam dunk. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess they're not quite comparable. But all I'm going to say is don't use the triangle two against a pressing defense because apparently they get runs on you and you end up losing by 32 points.
Yeah. In other news, the Buffs got beaten by Missouri 58-0 this weekend.
Nice.
Ouch. Yep.
That's Mizzou. Almost a basketball score. Mm-hmm. So, let's... Please move on, and I'm going next, and as, you know, lucky for our listeners, I actually have a Nintendo game to talk about, although Christ I'll begin God. With a little misfortune. I don't have any Wii games to talk about this week, because last Thursday, I packed up my Wii and shipped it off to Nintendo for repairs. The SD card hasn't been saving lately, and... that becomes a problem because I have to clean my fridge quite a lot, as you might imagine. And the disk drive has been extremely loud for months. It's actually louder than my Xbox.
So, that thing is fucking loud if you don't have one.
Yeah, yeah. When I told that to the...
That thing literally goes...
lifts off of the mothership.
Yeah, so when I told that to the Nintendo customer service rep, he was like, oh, wow. Yeah. Well, on the upside, I think I got him to be a reader of our site, or at least visit.
Nice.
But anyway, yeah, he was really mystified. I was getting the weirdest error from the SD card when I tried to copy a WiiWare game over. It would act like it was copying it. But after about, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds of the little logo spinning, you know, it would say the data was not copied. And then it would go away. And it would act as if it had worked, you know. So it didn't give me this big error message or anything. It basically, instead of saying the data was copied, it said the data was not copied.
Nice.
And then it moved on. And it took me a while before I even realized that's what it was saying. I was like, what the fuck does that mean? And I called Nintendo,
obvious.
And they basically said the same thing. I mean, they had no idea what that meant. They'd never heard of it before. So, they basically told me to send it in. And unfortunately, it wasn't under warranty anymore. It's a 2-year-old system, so I had to pay $90 for general repairs. But I don't really mind that much because I didn't pay anything for the system itself. I got it for, you know, review purposes back when the system first launched. And
lucky bastard.
That's probably why it's broken now, because I've probably reviewed about 50 games on it. So, yeah, it's well worn, you know, but it shouldn't be doing
it's
that
well
crap.
Loved.
So, yeah. So maybe by the time we record next week, I'll have it back. Maybe not. They're typically really fast, but they haven't even gotten it yet from FedEx. So.
Did they give you an estimate?
I think he said 3 to 7 days of repairs, but that's not including shipping. And like I said, I sent it on Friday. It's now Tuesday, and they still haven't even received it. So, you know, it's not the repair time I'm worried about. They are really fast about that. It's the shipping. But yeah, I'm hoping I get it soon. It does kind of help with my backlog of games that I wanted to play or that I needed to play. It kind of helps clear the plate, you know, a little bit. So, what I did this week, since I couldn't pick up Guitar Hero over the weekend, even though I really wanted to, and I'm disappointed you guys aren't talking about it, because I'm just really anxious to play it. But anyway, since I'm not going to be able to play that for a while, I just canceled my pre-order and moved it over to Castlevania Order of Ecclesia and just went ahead and picked that up. And I've been playing it pretty heavily the past few days, and I think it's really good. I definitely think it's a significant improvement over Portrait of Ruin, which is the one that came out 2 years ago. I'm not sure that I fully agree with all these like really glowing reviews, like 9 out of 10s. I mean, that's what Zach gave it on our side. I saw that at Game Life. They gave it a 9 out of 10, and you know, people don't seem to really have any particular criticism of it, and I definitely do. I mean, for one thing, it's really not that much different from any of the other ones. Anybody who tells you it's like a revolution in Metroidvania is full of bullshit.
But didn't you just say it was a significant improvement?
In general quality and polish, yes, it is. It's more fun. It's definitely more challenging than Portrait of Ruin, which I felt like I don't even really remember playing it. It was so easy. I got 100%
played
in,
it. Did you?
No, I did. I owned it. Yeah. But I think I got 100% in it in like 2 days. I mean, it was so pathetically easy that I just don't even remember. You know, it's like watching a Rambo movie. I mean, it's fun, but there's nothing to it. You're certainly not going to talk about it later.
The bit where he comes out of the mud and stabs that guy and then goes mental with the arrows that blow up. Who forgets that?
Okay, the first Rambo movie, yes. But the ones after that.
I was talking about Rambo 2.
Oh! Give me a break. No, the first Blood is great, but the other ones I'm not too
interested.
Oh, they're
awful,
anyway.
But I remember them. That's why I remember them. Probably.
Okay. Anyway, well, that's the thing. Portrait of Ruin, it wasn't awful.
Exactly,
it was just
it was just
sort of bland and very easy. So this is really hard. And it certainly has better graphics, better music. It's just better designed. But it's really the same thing. It's just the same thing as before. And they haven't done anything to revolutionize it. And I just keep, I don't know, I think because it's been 2 years instead of 1 year since the last one, that people are kind of like self-delusional about how different this is or something. But wake up, it's really not that much different. I don't have a problem with that. I like these kinds of games.
I'm not gonna
sing its praises and say, oh my god, EGA finally did it, blah blah blah. It's the same shit.
Well, yay, I think part of it is the fact that there's really no other game series that's doing what Castlevania is doing.
That's true.
Metroid 2D Metroid's abdicated
where is
from
it?
Producing any games since the last 4 years.
Matter. It's still out there. I mean,
well, you could still play Zero Mission.
Well, sure it is. I just played Zero Mission over the summer. I mean, obviously, Nintendo's not really interested in making more Metroids like this.
Yeah.
And that's why people, and you know, that's because the Castlevania series is so prolific. People eat it up, you know, it's like their regular diet of this kind of gameplay
Metroid,
that they're not going to get anywhere else. You know, I've heard Cave Story is kind of like this, so I'm really excited to try that.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, well, anyway, regardless, I'm sort of criticizing, I'm not so much criticizing the game, I'm criticizing the critics
people.
Of it, because I think they've sort of let people down who might be like, you know, I really want something that's not like the last game, or the last five games. Because this is, it is like those, but it's really good and I'm loving it, you know? I don't have that much more to say about it, I guess. It's just, it's so similar to the other ones that I don't really have anything in particular to say about it, except that it's fun and I'm playing it a lot.
I'm not criticizing the game. I'm criticizing Zachary Miller.
Well, it's not just Zach. Zach's a smart guy, but I think he said a lot of the same things a lot of other people are saying, and I just completely disagree with them, you know. But that's what Talkback's for. Okay,
well,
so Greg, please wrap it up.
Well, actually, I got my import copy of Order of Ecclesia today. So I put a couple of hours in, and I didn't put a couple of hours in, I put one in.
One is a couple.
Yeah. it's probably a little more than
metric.
One, yeah, so this is something I've been looking forward to, because I didn't actually end up playing Portrait of Ruin. It was too soon, and it didn't get the warmest reviews. It was kind of one of those things, is maybe I'll pick it up down the line, and I never did, and so I'm happy to skip straight to this one.
I think that's probably a good thing.
Well, I did the same thing with GBA. I skipped Harmony of Dissonance. I went from Circle.
Oh, that was also a good move.
I kind of just repeated the same tactic, and it seemed to have worked quite well. So, yeah, there's none of that fatigue element. I'm very much ready to play this kind of game again. Obviously, I haven't played it very much, so I can't make any in-depth observations, but... I'm pleased with the challenge level, very pleased with that. The early bosses are pretty promising. I love that sort of thing, you know, sort of bosses.
You mean pretty soul-crushing?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
Craig's like, no, you suck,
these are
dude.
The ones I fought, I fought like the crazy bend-over-backward skeleton guy, and I fought the crab thing that comes up the clock, It is a crab
lighthouse.
Thing. It is. That climbs up a giant lighthouse.
It's a giant enemy crab. Probably intentional.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Totally. Those are both.
Is it in Japan?
Those are both pretty cool fights that require you to actually dodge and recognize patterns and use attacks wisely rather than just sort of stand there and especially early in some of these other Castlevania games, like the early bosses are kind of like you can kind of just stand there and hit them for the most part, and if you just like evade a few attacks, that'll probably be
even in Symphony of the Night. There are a lot of bosses where you can just basically, if you're powerful enough, you can just stand there and smack.
Yeah, and I hate that. That is one of the things that really kind of what's the point? What is the point
exactly.
of a boss when it gets to that point? So it's a fine line to walk in terms of not making them really difficult, but also making them like it's somewhat challenging. But for me, the balance looks good in that regard so far. Obviously, the more linear, the sort of this like whole overworld map and these little like linear bits are a bit different. Portrait of Ruin had some of that, didn't it? But like these linear bits that were sort of on the side.
Yeah, but they were all branched off of one unified castle.
So it was a bit different.
And you don't have that in Ecclesia.
Yeah, but you've got this overworld map that's like something from Final Fantasy Tactics or something. It's very abstract. The one thing I have no problem with it being linear and like not really being like explorative at all, like these bits, but there were two sections that were not just linear, but they were just corridors, I think is the way you put it on the floor.
Literally a
and there's
corridor.
No level design at all. The level design is like a bare bones brawler. Not like something you would have seen in an old school Castlevania.
I think that's intentional. I mean, I think it is meant to kind of harken back to the original Castlevania games.
But that's the point. No,
it's
no,
not really fair because even the original Castlevania had, you were climbing ladders.
Yeah, precisely.
And
I mean, the original Castlevania,
space.
Games. Yeah, I mean, you can consider the 8-bit games, even the original, certainly when you get to Castlevania 3. If the levels had been like that, it would have been terribly boring.
Yes.
Yeah, but you had all sorts of hazards and enemy placements and all that, rather than just a sort of parade through a forest or whatever. That I was a bit disappointed that I'm quite happy to have to have the structure be a little bit different, a little bit more linear. I love those the really old school Castlevanias. I love those, but let's have a little bit of level design. I just think that was a bit of a. I mean. It's early.
I agree totally.
It's early, and it's there may not be something that really mars the game, especially overall. But I just think it's for me. I always like to look at a section of a game and see what is it achieving. And when you've just got a straight line where you fight some enemies in between, that's achieving pretty much nothing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But it looks really promising. I've been really looking forward to this, and I've no doubt. I'm quite happy for it to be very similar to the old ones. So I'm sure I'm going to enjoy this immensely. The only other thought I had is I was pondering the last two episodes, and we had a TGS episode and an episode with former RFN host Carl Castaneda. And we did not mention the fact that there's a new No More Heroes been announced at TGS.
Oh, that's yeah, that's right.
And yeah. I just thought we
and
should...
We even talked about No More Heroes.
Yeah, we did a bit, but it wasn't appropriate to go into an announcement in the context of that discussion. But, you know, just generally, still. I'm surprised. So I suppose it is quite a surprise announcement in many ways.
A bit, yeah.
So we're looking at 2010, I think, early 2010 for the West.
Yeah, and January.
And there's not actually a... There's already a European release date confirmed, and supposedly there's going to be two...
No Hunger Strike.
Without blood.
Yeah, supposedly it's going to be two versions, and that intrigues me. Like, two versions? What, like, in the same countries? Or is, like, there going to be a version for the more conservative countries that's, like, less bloody? And then... The more liberal countries are going to have like a bloody version. I mean, what does that mean?
That's really interesting and also kind of pointless, because if these are all European versions, that means they're all going to be PAL compatible. Yeah. So you could just buy another country's version.
Well, see, that's
and change
yeah.
the language.
It doesn't matter to them.
No, it doesn't matter to them.
I
don't think No More Heroes is likely to stir vast, vast controversy when there's more sort of scary things out there. Even a Wii, like Mad World, I'm sure, will cause more problems than No More Heroes.
Yeah.
But interesting, there's no Japanese release date. I think they've given up after he sat there and nobody turned up for his signing or whatever.
I had like that Spinal Tap moment with the...
nobody turned up for
a
signing of
he's
his.
He's sitting there with rolls of toilet paper to sign, and nobody comes. Yeah. That's so sad. I mean, I wish I was there. I would have sat there and talked to him for ages. That's so sad.
I'm sure it'll still release in Japan. It just probably won't.
It's sold like crap in Japan.
Still,
it's sold much better outside.
It's being made by a Japanese staff. I'm sure they're writing it in Japanese. It's going to get translated by somebody else. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is basically a game about America.
Yes,
so
but it's,
I understand why it didn't go over in Japan, even though in some ways it is very Japanese.
Yeah, because
still.
It's about America from a Japanese perspective. It's like through this
exactly.
prism.
But maybe they're not interested in that.
Maybe they just look at it as one more game that's catering to a Western audience, which is not popular over there in Japan right now, because that's how people feel that the game industry is going in Japan. They feel that a lot of companies are catering to Western audiences exclusively.
Well, yeah, but they are. I mean,
they are, exactly.
Yep. Look at Konami.
Capcom is. Other companies, I'm not sure,
Capcom
are.
Capcom is the biggest offender, but I think a lot of them are starting to move that way.
Yeah, well...
You say offender, but it actually... I'm way more excited about what Capcom is putting out than Konami, for instance.
From their perspective. Sega's another example of a company doing that.
Yeah, Sega is becoming a lot more Western. I mean, they've been teaming up with a lot of Western developers in publishing agreements, and they've got the Silicon Knights agreement that we still don't even know what that game is. Mm-hmm. Could be Eternal Darkness 2, for all we know. I mean, this came out of TGS, where basically Wada, the president of Square Enix, was saying that they need to get more Westernized, or they're... The Japanese developers are going
to
fall
up,
by the wayside.
Yeah,
and I think that's
sort of
overstating the problem.
Now, hasn't he? Is like some sort of Japanese developer alliance to further the cause of Japanese developers?
Yep.
I think the bigger problem is that Japanese publishers are so conservative that they're basically content to just remake the same games over and over again, and then also rip off their competitors' games, and that's why every other game you hear about out of TGS is a Monster Hunter clone. Mm-hmm. You know, well, it's popular, so we got to make our version of it, and that happens in America, but I think to a much less extent than you saw at TGS this year, where it seemed like every single game was a Japanese RPG and or a Monster Hunter clone.
Maybe.
And basically, I think what Wada is saying is we got to get a little more outside the box, and if emulating what's going on in America and Europe helps us to do that, you know, it helps us to branch out in other directions, maybe that's a good thing. But what I would prefer is that they just create a new kind of Japanese game rather than try to make American games.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you can say that it happened at TGS more this year than it did in the U.S., but think about at the height of the GTA 3 sort of hype, how many GTA clones came out?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think it's the same thing here. I don't think it's any different. I mean, major publishers are putting out GTA clones. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's really any different. I think it's just an issue in Japan. If you make a game intrinsically designed for the Japanese market, you're dealing with a very small marketplace.
Yeah, this it's a shrinking market.
Yes, a shrinking market, and you can't afford to make the same sort of tactical risks you can if you're aiming your game at a much broader Europe or North American audience.
Mm-hmm. Well, and No More Heroes is the perfect example of that.
Yep.
Because, I mean, Suda is a guy who's not making the typical Japanese game.
He's not making a typical anybody
in Japan.
Game.
Right.
Yeah.
And his stuff is typically more geared towards America. I mean, even if you look at Killer 7 and probably
Michigan,
even Fatal
Frame,
although I'm not... Yeah. And I'm not sure just how much Suda influences over Fatal Frame, but I mean, you know, it seems likely that is coming to America at some point, and they probably had that in mind when they made it. So, but yeah, certainly the other games. It seems like he's actually kind of one of the people who's already figured this out, and he's not making games specifically for Japan.
I don't know if he's figured this out.
And also, he is. You know, he's teaming up with EA for that other game.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't say he's figured it out. It might just be that his taste in gaming is more in line with what we consider American-style gaming.
Sure.
He did work on that RPG, though, Contact. And that was,
I think that was just Grasshopper, but he personally wasn't necessarily that involved.
Yeah, I don't. I think you're right, Greg.
Team,
I don't.
Not, Grasshopper.
No, but I
team.
Don't think Suda was involved.
Everything.
In Contact.
I would say everything at Grasshopper comes through him at some point.
Mm, that doesn't mean he had necessary creative input or control. I don't know that much about Contact other than what was said about it over several episodes of this podcast.
It's very, very Japanese. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, Grasshopper isn't really a developer. They're a manufacturing company.
Grasshopper Manufacturing.
Yes, that's it. Taking your name a little seriously there, John.
Okay, well, we better wrap up new business, but I'm glad you brought that up, Greg. That's definitely new business.
Well,
you
one
know?
Thing
yeah.
we
doesn't
say
have
about
to
that,
be just
though,
a game.
Is that all we have is a trailer, and that trailer looks like he's just fucking pissed off and constipated.
Yeah, I don't put much stock in that trailer.
Yeah,
I'm just glad they're making it. And,
well, remember the original trailer for Killer 7 looked absolutely gorgeous. And you know where you find that trailer in the game? It's the opening cinematic that Travis is watching on TV. Nice.
That's funny. Okay, well, we better take a break. We'll be back with DLC Mondays and Instagram. We are back, and we'll kick off segment 2 of DLC Mondays. This week we have Strong Bad Episode 3 for 1,000 points. They are doing pretty good of sticking to their monthly schedule.
Yep.
That's about all I could say about it. I haven't played it. I have no interest. But if you bought the first two, I'm sure you'll pick this one up too.
Yep.
We have the next art style game. This is Roto Hex for WiiWare. It's 600 points, and it is a port of Dial Hex for GBA, one of the Bit Generations games.
And did it upgrade the graphics at all?
Does it look like
I'm not sure. I don't have a Wii right now, so I wasn't able to download it, but I probably will when I get it back.
Yeah, this is...
It's a puzzle game.
Yeah, so Dial Hex, I think it's a lot like Hexic, if that means anything to anybody. It didn't strike me as one of the more interesting ones. It's one of the three original Bit Generation games that I don't own, along with Boundish, which was a Pong clone.
Boundish?
Yeah, I think everyone sort of thought Boundish was the least worthwhile, but
yeah.
It's certainly got the least worthwhile name.
Yeah, I think Steven Rodriguez has Dial Hex and likes it a lot.
I think it's supposed to be a pretty good puzzler. It didn't seem like it was one of the more interesting bit generation games. But now, and obviously, if you were getting hold of bit generation games at the time from the West, they weren't necessarily expensive, but they were a little, they weren't that cheap either. 600 points could, some of the positive things I've heard about is probably, again, pretty good value, although I doubt it's as good as value as Orbient, obviously, because that's really, really good.
So, do you have Orbient now, Greg?
No, I played through all of Orbital, the GBA game.
Absolutely,
every single level, all the advanced stuff. I adored that game. We actually in Europe do not have any of the art style games yet, which is a little concerning at this point.
Well, they're not out in Japan either, I'm pretty sure.
Obviously with Japan it's a bit different in terms of they already are out in some form, so maybe that's the reason. But here I'm a little concerned. I mean, we have this weird alternating week structure where we go virtual console 1 week and then WiiWare the next, so it's a once every 2 week structure. But by now I would have thought there should be time to have inserted at least one of these in, so it's a little disappointing. I mean, obviously Orbient's the best and I already have that, so it's not personally costly, but it's still sad.
I wonder if part of the reason that they're doing sort of these such straightforward ports of the bit generation games to WiiWare is that they plan to re-release them again for the DSi shop, because these games seem like they would work extremely well on DSi. They should be small downloads. They can sell them for even less, maybe. I don't know. It seems like, if that's the case, then I'm pretty excited about a game like Cubello, even though, I reviewed it and gave it a 6. I don't think it's amazing, but it is worth downloading if you like puzzle games. And I'm just really excited that Nintendo is kind of into supporting development of these sort of smaller games that they're able to release in this kind of fashion, and that they're willing to bring them out in different regions, that could be pretty exciting if they continue with this kind of trend with the DSi shop, because I think these would work really well on that.
No, I agree. That's definitely something that, in terms of just re-releasing something that already exists in some form, obviously they're already going that way with the Brain Aid stuff, so it seems perfectly plausible.
Yeah. Okay, well, for Virtual Console this week, we have one game. It's Earthworm Jim for Genesis, 800 points, and I think the Genesis version is generally considered to be superior to the Super Nintendo version.
It has an extra level. That's what I...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I imagine the graphics are less colorful and so forth, but it has an extra level. Yeah. So
which one came out first?
It's 800 points and certainly a classic game, very well-loved. I always thought it was okay, but...
What platform did it come out on first? Super Nintendo or Genesis?
I think it was a Genesis game first, but I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there was a big delay between the two. It wasn't one of those ones where it was like a year or anything.
No, probably not. But actually, the thing that I remember the most is the music. People always talk about the music. It was composed by Tommy Tallarico, who now does the video games live concerts, and he was on G4 or
as a complete douche.
G4 for a while. Yeah, he's kind of a dick on TV, but
kind of a dick. He sticks controllers down his pants.
I think that was a TV personality thing, because I know some people who've met him in person, and everyone seems to like him in person. So I think that was just a character sort of he played.
Yeah.
I agree. I thought he was terrible on that show. But he's actually still doing some game music, and I just heard a rumor this week that he is going to be doing some of the music for Sonic and the Black Knight on Wii. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But he did the music in Earthworm Jim, and this was a game made by Shiny before they became a shovelware factory with Enter the Matrix and other such
drivel. So, drivel, I think, is the word you're looking for.
Drivel, yeah, that's good. Yeah,
I like that one.
I can't even remember the last game Shiny made. It was complete shit, though. Anyway, this was back when Shiny was good, and they made MDK and things like that, and Earthworm Jim. So, there you go. It's on Virtual Console now, and now we're moving into Listener Mail.
Listener Mail! So,
John Lindemann, you have the first question.
Oh, I do. Oh, you caught me without my chat thing up. All right, hold on.
As okay. always.
The referee.
Come on, come on. Here we go.
John has never actually read the first letter he's been given, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Ever.
Jesus.
I'm not even making a comment. I'm just...
Tough crowd.
I'll give you a hint. Right. It starts with an S.
Well, that could be an L. Hey.
Wait, let's clear a space for him to say this.
Okay. Schadenfreude writes, shortly after your Indigo Prophecy discussion in episode 113, I started playing it. After beating it this past weekend and listening to your discussion again, do you think Nintendo will ever focus on story in their games? The majority of Nintendo games are not remembered for their storytelling, but for their gameplay, which has always been one reason for their wide appeal. While I don't think Nintendo would ever create a game with a story at all similar to Indigo Prophecy, I think they could do it in their own way, as they always do, and it would work. Do you think Disaster Day of Crisis is, in a way, similar to what I'm talking about?
Yes! that game has so much story, it's literally bursting at the seams with it.
That was a valiant effort, James.
It is story. It's all story. It has amazing... amount of story. Yeah.
Greg, thoughts?
I think Shoddy, as I'm going to refer to him, was kind of suggesting disaster in a tongue-in-cheek fashion. Yeah. But
I hope not.
I'm trying to. It seems like Nintendo has gone like a really strong story route. I mean, if you include something like Fire Emblem, which I guess is a pretty strong narrative type game. Then you could say that they do have some experience in it, but it's definitely not their forte. Mm-hmm. But I've always thought this. I've always wanted to, you know, even when Nintendo makes RPGs, they tend to be, like, you know, think about Paper Mario. They tend to be pretty fucking light on story.
Yeah,
and
deliberately.
I really would like to see them have a go at it because everything they do with such gusto.
Yeah.
That it seems like it'd be a really cool experiment for them to go into that kind of thing, and I'm still waiting for them to do
it,
but I'd love to see it.
The concern that I would have is if you force it, you know, it's like, in terms of, it's like, right, the idea is we make a game that's about story, except we don't have a story to tell. And then you get a contrived, you know, unless they have some people there that have this material kind of, you know, blossoming in their mind somewhere, and then somehow it comes out. It wouldn't be good. And it just seems like the culture at Nintendo is not inclined to have that going on behind the scenes, really.
Right.
Well, it kind of seems like they feel like story bogs down the gameplay. Like, the gameplay is basically what their main forte is, and story would just kind of bog that down. So they always keep it light.
Yeah, I mean, an interesting case is, like, with Mario Galaxy, though. It has this weird little subplot about Princess Rosalina. But they make it...
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it.
And they make it entirely optional. They make it... Basically, you don't have to ever deal with it because it's in this little part of the Comet Observatory where you go and you read the storybook. And if you don't want to... If you read one chapter and think, yeah, I don't need to do this, then you can just forget it and not bother. Yeah, so that's their way of sort of...
I think it is worth experiencing that story. I mean, I think it's very charming. But it does seem like when they do even bother to put a story in their games... They do it very hesitantly, and they make it easy to opt out of.
Was it actually the director of that game, Koizumi, who like worked as like somebody worked on like the manual for Link to the Past or whatever? Originally says that he's been trying to sneak story in to like Miyamoto's game for years, and I guess like Mario Galaxy is sort of a culmination of that, where it's in there, but you certainly don't have to deal with it, not by a long shot.
Well, let's hope it's not the peak of his efforts, because, Koizumi is, to me, one of the most exciting people at Nintendo. I mean, the stuff he's done with Jungle Beat and the Galaxy is really exciting, and I can't wait to see what
the next game is.
Yeah,
if they are doing something original next, rather than Galaxy 2 or whatever, then perhaps, you know, if he feels strongly enough to actually try and sort of slip it under the door into other games, if he has sort of real creative control, maybe he could be the guy that has a story to tell and wants to tell it, and they say, you know what, you do it, you know.
Yeah, well, it can't hurt that he works hundreds of miles away from Miyamoto. So, I mean, it would seem like they probably have a little more autonomy, in the sense that Retro has put some story in their games. They've made it sort of all optional, and they've sort of done it in a backhanded way, a backdoor way, but obviously they've made some effort to kind of introduce that, and mm-hmm. it seems like maybe the studios that are farther away from the core of Nintendo maybe are kind of pushing
kind
in this direction.
Well, that's kind of that whole corporate culture thing I was talking about. It just seems like maybe, you know, within, you know, EAD itself, you know, there isn't people that actually really want to tell stories, whereas maybe elsewhere mm-hmm. there are. I think the untold story is the fact that when Miyamoto comes in and does his upending of the tea table, the first thing to go is the script. It's actually on the table.
Yeah.
It just flies in the
right
air.
It's like
it gets
right.
And he had one copy, and that's it. It's dead.
Mm-hmm. It's in the shredder.
Well, I mean, we haven't mentioned Zelda yet, but I feel like, you know, the lack of a strong story, and of course Zelda's have always had a story, especially since Link to the Past. But even back to Adventure of Link, Zelda 2 has a pretty clear storyline, whereas the first one doesn't as much. But I feel like, again, it's something they've obviously kind of shoehorned in at the last minute, and
I think they're more concept-driven, aren't they, first of all? You know, it's kind of like, we want a game on the ocean, and then you come up with the whole stuff about the floods and Ganon and all that afterwards.
The pirates. That never bothered me until Twilight Princess. And I feel like if they're going in that direction, if they're making the world more immersive and they're kind of making things a little more realistic and they're trying to draw you in a moody kind, you know, through things like mood, then it feels weird not to have a compelling story.
Yeah.
It suddenly seems, because of all the other improvements that they've made, it now feels like something's missing. And it's the same argument that, like, Matt Casamassina makes for voice acting in Zelda. He's like, if you go back to Ocarina of Time, it's fine without it. But, and it's not so much that, that it's now kind of a modern feature that every game should have. It's not like every game now should have voice acting. But if you're going to do all the other things that they've done to Zelda to still hold back on that one element,
it becomes
unnatural. And I totally agree with him. And I think story fits into the same category. I mean, if they go back to something like Wind Waker, where it's more about the style of it, you know, it's not meant to be super immersive, then they don't need a strong story. But I think if they're going to continue in this sort of realistic fashion, they really need to put more effort into that part.
Intuitively, I think they're probably going to go more Wind Waker with the next Zelda. I don't think they'll go further than
that. Yeah, and that's great. That's great. I have no problem with that. But, yeah. Okay, well, James, you have the next question.
All right, so Oni writes, I was recently reading an article on GameSpot about the potential for an MMORPG integration game on the PSP, and was thinking about how the DS has Dragon Quest IX for it, which is sort of multi-LAN play. My question is, what do you think the chances that Sony will make a PSP2 to match the DS2 and might be coming out soon? And also, what do you think of the possibility of MMORPG aspect on handheld gaming, if it would even make sense?
Well,
there's two questions coming
out. Yeah, I mean,
there.
I think...
Yeah, they're sort of independent.
Well, let's go on the PSP2 DS2 thing, because that's
pretty easy. That's the whole thing. I think the PSP2 is actually selling now. I think that Sony is really in no rush. First off, they're not going to catch the DS. Second off, the PSP2 PSP is still selling, so they're just going to ride that out. It's fine. They're probably just going to
keep doing these little divisions, don't they? Like the 3000.
But every time they revise them, they break something else.
Well, they can revise it again.
Yeah. But yeah, like their last division.
I think the PSP2 will come out about the same time as the DS2, which is probably at least two more years away.
Yeah, the last revision of the PSP, for example, caused the screen to get all pixelated.
Yeah, lame. But that's the thing. I think the PSP is more tied to the PS3 than anything else. You know, because they kind of go hand in hand with each other. I think when they, you know, release the PS4, that's when they'll probably, you know, release a new handheld to go along with it shortly after.
That's like 8 years away.
Maybe 20 according to Sony. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
well, you know, you could say the same thing about the DS being tied to the Wii, and it probably should be that way.
But it won't be because the DS came out. DS came out what, 2 years before the GameCube?
For
the Wii.
Yeah. Well, the thing is with the DS, so though, the DS doesn't interact as much with the Wii as the PSP does with the PS3.
Yeah, well, I think that's the point, is that it's so surprising that it doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
it is, actually.
That they've been so hands-off with that, when you consider, especially before the Wii was so successful, but the DS had kind of caught fire in Japan, especially.
Yeah.
You might have thought they would have been more aggressive.
Yeah, I really thought they were going to drive that synergy.
But it didn't really happen.
No, it's weird. So, Okay, MMOs. Well, then maybe to the second question. What about MMORPGs on handhelds? Do you think it makes sense? How would you do it? I mean, John, you're the MMO expert.
Yeah. I've been crowned.
You walked into that, Mike.
By default.
You've been crowned. Your ass has been crowned by whom, may I ask?
Oh.
Well, that's the thing. I think the one thing that the PSP has going for it is that it does have pretty good hardware, and it also has, you know, pretty good wireless in there. So I think it definitely could be done. Whether or not it could be done successfully, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, after seeing the success of Monster Hunter in Japan, I think that Japan would be more open to something like that than the West.
Well, you can already play Monster Hunter Freedom 2, I think, mm-hmm. online. In a fairly massive setting,
that's not an MMORPG.
Yeah, but
it's more like Phantasy Star Online.
But
it's four people.
But it's part of. I thought it was more than four. I thought it was like eight.
I'm pretty sure it's four, but I could be wrong.
That's part of the way there, though. I mean, it's the combat element of the MMO there. Mm-hmm. It's essentially building the coherent world structure around and building up the infrastructure to support mm-hmm. it. And I think I don't think you could do a charge-based system on a handheld MMO. I don't think people would be willing to pay subscriptions for a handheld game. I just don't think handheld games are, in most people's mind, generally more disposable than their console counterparts.
I mean,
so I think that you would have to come up with the methodology of making a free MMO game on the handheld. And there are free MMOs on PCs, but they're generally technically one step below a lot of the other
stuff. You could do something like Phantasy Star Online, where, you know, people buy the game and then go online with the game, or like, you know, Final Fantasy XI.
Well, they're already doing that with Phantasy Star Zero.
Yep. There's also, I believe the DS has a version of the Korean MMORPG Ragnarok Online coming out.
Oh, really?
The DS has just an awful amount of online RPGs, I think, coming. That was pretty much like TGS for the DS, wasn't it? It was just online RPGs
and especially RPGs. Dragon Quest IX, which wasn't really at TGS.
Yeah, it was just a trailer.
That's the
again.
Biggest online RPG.
Yeah, Ragnarok is going to be released December 18th in Japan, and it is going to be. It will not. Massively multiplayer features of the original version. Oh, okay, are not going to be in there, but we'll support three players.
Yeah,
there we go.
Well,
good grief.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously, with the DS, it's still like when you see what they've done with online stuff on the DS, it seems a little bit ambitious. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you probably would have to wait for a second DS. And all I will say is, Nintendo with the DSi have seemed to have concentrated a little more on wireless and online stuff. So if you're going to have a full-out successor console, maybe that would have the kind of online infrastructure that could actually support an MMO.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the main problem with this, well, I think there are a couple problems. It's that online really still is not a key feature for DS developers. They're just not putting that much effort towards. I mean, you look at something like the new Trackmania coming out. It doesn't have online track building and sharing. And that is the game on PC. That's what it's about. And yet they ported to DS and they're like, we don't need that. You have all these strategy games and even RTS games, a couple RTS games they don't have online. But even stuff like the new Age of Empires sequel, you know, it's a strategy game and I don't think it has online play either. And it just makes you wonder, like, what's wrong with you people? Like, don't you understand that's why people remember when they did the Worms game and it didn't have online and then people just laughed at it.
Yeah, I mean,
and then the next one came out and it did have online and people were like, yes, finally.
I mean, what do you think is more the limitation, the actual technical aspects that it's a bit tricky to get it working well, or is it that just the culture of the DS is the sense that it's not expected and therefore one can get away with not doing it to a large extent?
Well, I think it's both, and you need developers who are willing to kind of go the extra mile and really push it the way, say, Vicarious Visions has in the past. But the other problem that we haven't even brought up yet is friend codes, and that's the biggest problem with MMO game, especially.
But there have been online games on Nintendo systems without friend codes.
Yeah, but they're very limited interaction. An MMO is about maximum interaction.
Yeah,
I guess that could be abilities and working together.
But
going to happen
if you have to pay
codes.
For subscription, couldn't they say that's the basis on?
Yeah,
which...
I mean, then you come back to the problem of will people pay for a subscription on a handheld?
Yeah,
MMO,
well, I think that,
I just don't think the business model's
the biggest problem is with any MMORPG that would come out on a handheld. there would have to be something specific to the game design that would make it better or make it unique when compared to like a PC, because you can't just have just transfer it and have a gimped version on a handheld. Because then people are just going to be like...
That would be like the hook, then, though, wouldn't it, as well? If you could tie it into the fact that it is portable, then that would actually be a real rationale for why you've got this on a...
Because otherwise, people are just going to say, well, this is just a cheap version of what I can get on PC, so why am I going to buy it? You know?
Right. It's got to be...
I may have mentioned this before on the show, but I'm continually shocked... at the lack of anything compelling on DS that makes me want to actually carry my DS with me every day and take it online.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like,
hotspot.
I've got you covered, John. DS pedometer.
Done. See, I think
it just seems like this massive design space that's being completely ignored.
I think you could do something else with the DS. It's not quite MMO, but you can get online with other players is sort of a alternate reality almost kind of gaming where it does interact with people who are in your general area as you move through areas, and that way you'd be encouraged to bring the game with you.
So it's actually different depending on where you are.
Wasn't there some like dating game that did that?
Yeah, I mean if you
there was this Korean dating game that did something like that. And it like chirped when you came into a zone with somebody, and you pulled it out, and then like it compared your stats,
and then you went up and started making out with them. That's pretty cool. I mean, you know, Nintendogs did that kind of thing,
a little bit.
It had puppy mode or whatever the fuck they called it, and it would listen for other people who also had the same mode, carrying it around in sleep mode, and that is the tip of the iceberg. But I mean, it's in the right direction, and yet that game came out what 2-3 years ago, and Nintendo hasn't pushed it. Yeah, like, I mean, that kind of thing has so much potential if you made it something that's a lot more interesting, you know, and that didn't just work when you had the thing in sleep mode, but you could actually open it up and like try to find people in public areas, and the game has to be ubiquitous enough.
Well,
that
what if you did something like this?
You know, that you actually have a good chance. But even if it's ubiquitous, people won't actually use the mode unless it's worth using.
Yeah.
And in Nintendogs it's not. And so it didn't really work. But you have to make it interesting enough that people will actually do that.
Well, the thing is, what if you did something like this using that Nintendogs example where, you know, it'll find people that are around you. Why not have a game where you could take control of real geographical areas? So you walk into, you know, so exactly a turf war game where you had the entire country was mapped out,
you got it, man,
cut into little squares. You walked into a square, and if somebody else was around you, you could battle that person that person in front of you for the square. That would be pretty crazy.
By the way,
that's awesome.
By the way, that would end in somebody getting their face punched
in. God bless it.
Yeah, there's just so much creative possibility in this kind of thing, combining online accessibility and portability, and nobody's taken good advantage of it yet. It's really sad.
I suppose
sad.
You could have got a look at the iPod platform. Maybe could go in that way sometime down the line.
Oh, yeah, I think it's going to happen on iPod long before it happens on DS. I really do. For one thing, it's a more of an open platform, so you know people are going to take bigger risk with it, and it has the new ones have GPS, and that helps a lot.
Yeah, because then you could actually do it by a geographical location.
Yeah, well, they certainly could have added GPS to the DSi, and I'm a little surprised they didn't.
I think it would just be too much of a cost increase. They decided it's not worth it.
I know that the and I'm not saying this is trivial, but the GPS chip in the new iPods are less than $10 per chip. So it's not a massive increase.
Yeah, but then
it may kill their margins.
You have to get software too.
Sure, that's true. Yeah, but it seems feasible.
Yeah, I mean it's feasible.
Anyway, that was a cool discussion, but we need to move on.
Yeah,
so,
this is
Greg,
from
you have the next one.
It says, "Hey guys, long time listener here. About the DSi, since it includes the Opera browser and the DSi doesn't have a GBA port." Does it have to have more RAM than either the DS or DS Lite, unless, of course, they optimize it to work with 4 megabits of RAM? So I think we've confirmed it does have more RAM, doesn't it? Or I don't know. All the information about the DSi is really cloudy because it was
it
because
it
was like live blogs of live blogs that sort of scrawled down very hastily or whatever. So yeah, even though it's coming, it'll, like, by the time this podcast goes out, the DSi will probably be out in Japan. We still don't know.
Yeah, it's amazing how little like advance notice Nintendo of Japan feels comfortable giving people about before they release things.
Well, I don't even think they need to anymore at this point. They don't even need to market anymore. They're just like, we're making something. It could be like a spoon, and it would be like next week on the NPDs, it would be like Spoon by Nintendo, number one, 500,000 copies sold.
It's new generation Spoon, not next generation Spoon.
So yeah, I'm pretty sure it does just have the extra RAM, but like anything that we say about the DSi, that's not totally, absolutely confirmed beyond any doubt, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, I mean, since we don't have a whole lot more to say about this, maybe this would be a good time to bring up this argument in the talk back for that episode where we talked about the DSi announcement, because, you know, we were saying on there that that both cameras were 0.3 megapixels, and then somebody in the thread said, oh no, you guys are wrong, one of them is 0.3 and the other is 3.0. And I said, well, where's the source?
No, see, because it's gone. No, the original, so, I mean, all I could say is one original source was from the live blogs of the live blogs, which is obviously shaky,
right,
but it could also be accurate. And the problem is so much misinformation out there. Like, I saw a newspaper report that said quite unambiguously that they're both 0.3 megapixels. But the problem is this newspaper report also said that the DS Lite was the first time the system had touchscreen functionality, which somewhat undermines credibility. So, yeah, it's really like...
So,
I mean,
we still don't know, basically.
I
mean, we're still not
100%
sure
that it was 0.3, because that sounded really bad to me. But that's...
That sounds terrible.
Because the reason is, with PAL, the standard definition in PAL is 0.4. It's actually bigger than that. So I thought, God, if it's less than standard definition, that's rubbish. You know, but of course, it is actually standard definition for NTSC. And that makes sense, because then it's just you put it on your Wii and it'll fill the 4.3 box in. And
By the way, next week we're going to be doing our podcast. It'll be out in Japan, and we're going to find out it wasn't 3 or 0.3, it was 30 megapixels.
Oh, you never know.
One picture and the entire memory of the DS cartridge is
gone. You pointed out that is, you know, 0.3 just happens to be equivalent to standard definition on an intuitive basis. I think you're right, Johnny. I'd be very surprised if it were more than that.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly willing to be proven wrong. I hope I could be proven wrong that one of them is 3.0, but I haven't seen any kind of definitive proof of that. And unfortunately, I don't even think Nintendo of Japan's website.
Well, I was under the impression that it was actually 300,000 pixels, right? That's what they said, which is
exactly. That would be 0.3 megapixels. Yeah. Yeah, they just phrase it a different way. It's, you know, it's the same way that instead of billion, they say thousand million and things like that. They say that in England too, don't they?
When they would use billion.
Thousand million.
Almost exclusively.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Because that makes sense versus what we have in our stupid ass media.
Yeah, okay. I like billion. But, okay.
Billion makes sense versus
I like bajillion,
whatever.
Personally, but... There's a little bit of
gazillion. I used to like Google back when it was a number.
Yep, it's really been killed.
All right. So the last email is from Adolf, and he writes, "Hey RFN, I love your podcast. Anyway, if you could make a Zelda game and do crazy things to torture the gamer, what would you do?"
All water dungeons. Every level of water dungeons.
Sailing. Oh wait a
That's
minute.
A good
so
one.
That's already been done.
Oh. John, actually, you had suggested.
No, this
you had you had suggested random
yes,
water dungeons.
In honor of your game, random water dungeons.
That's pretty good. Let's see. I would probably give Link a horse that doesn't actually go where you tell it to go.
Tingle is
a good one. Instead of. I've got a good one. Instead of the ocarina, it's actually like some sort of bizarre, like, ball of light musical instrument that's from Wii Music. And
dog sounds.
And instead of dog sounds, it mostly plays songs made of.
Hey, listen.
Yeah. You know, with the predisposition towards musical elements in the Zelda series, don't you think the next Zelda game for Wii will have some kind of subset of Wii music involved?
I hope the hell not.
I mean, you're playing, you know, say if they go back to the Wind Waker style, it's, you know, now with the Wind Waker, you actually have to use the remote and you waggle it up and down just like Wii music, and it goes ding, 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 ding.
Well, thinking of that, do you think Wind Waker is one of the games that might get ported to the Wii?
It could happen, but...
That's a good question. Again, I would like that, because it would force them to go a little crazier with the series.
I think they're going to go pretty mental with the new Zelda, actually, this time. So
if you look at Phantom Hourglass, then that's sort of the trend that they're on, is they're starting to get pretty weird with it.
I think Wind Waker's a good fit for the Wii, because, I mean, Link even looks like a Mii. Mm-hmm. I mean...
That's true.
It didn't sell great. I mean, it sold pretty well, but it wasn't. But wasn't great.
Not outstanding. I mean, I'm sure they could do that. I mean, they may just see how they said they've gone with these sort of more obscure titles to start with, so they may use that as a sort of pilot, and then you could look at. You know, I mean, I guess I think you can get away with it more with Zelda than maybe Mario Sunshine.
Mario Sunshine would be so good with the pointer.
It would
be really cool.
Yeah, that'd
spray.
Be fun.
It'd be really
I would
good.
Certainly rebuy Wind
and they
Waker.
Could fix the camera, and it would be perfect.
I would rebuy Wind Waker on the Wii. I'm not sure I'd rebuy Sunshine. And I enjoyed Sunshine.
No,
it was criticized way too harshly, but I would still.
It was the best. It was a great Mario game. Actually, it made use of the dual analog sticks because you had to control Mario and the camera at the same time. It's like playing an FPS or something. It's brilliant.
Seriously,
see, if they could just
that was the challenge.
Half,
some
two-player.
Of those void levels, like that, was the big challenge for me. Was actually controlling the camera.
Oh
at
yeah,
the same
easily.
Time and then,
yeah,
I kind of enjoyed.
Here's
it
a big. Here's you, you go. A Zelda game with the same engine that we've been using for the past few 3D Zelda games, but with Mario Sunshine cameras. There's a game that would annoy the gamer.
You know, actually, can't you control the camera in the GameCube version of Twilight Princess?
Yeah.
Really?
It's a bit more limited, I think, than it was in Wind Waker for whatever reason. You can't quite sort of like zoom at, you know, when you sort of swivel around with the C stick, it doesn't seem to give you quite the same range. But yeah, you can do it.
That's how I survived sailing.
Yeah.
That
looks nice.
That's something.
Look
different.
At that over there. That's pretty. Look at that rock.
See the wind blow through his
hair. I just went and made a sandwich.
Oh, that sounds a little...
Just let him go.
Yeah.
How fast do you make sandwiches? It only takes like 30 seconds to get to most places.
Well, not if you're... You know, it's not nearly so bad after you get the tornadoes from the spell.
But I usually did
that
as soon as I
caught
it.
Yeah, early in the game, there's some big parts where you just, you know...
You just sail through.
Which is kind of strange, really, for, you know, early in the game.
Yeah, it does sort of put you into some dangerous territory.
Bit of a slow start,
but I don't know. I can distinctly remember, and I think this was when I was mapping out the world, so I was... You know, I was trying to go to the most obscure out of the reach quadrants of the map, but I can actually remember sometimes literally falling asleep, and then I would wake up and
it's
he would
Sim
be
City.
I would wake up and he'd be surrounded by pirates getting his ass beat. You know, I was like, "Whoa, where
or
am
those
I?"
Fucking sharks.
So maybe I should not get my pilot's license.
No, trust me, it's not so bad if you're flying because the plane's making all kinds of noise.
It's true, actually flying a plane, there's
you
a lot
might
to
pass
it.
Out due to
I've,
the pressure.
I've done it a couple
whatever,
times, and it's awesome.
Well, so that's a whole different issue.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's our last letter. I want to thank those of you who did write us, and encourage the rest of you to do the same. You can send any kind of question or comment about any game we talked about, any kind of topics for suggested topics for discussion, anything like that. You can send that to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and please remember to include your location if you want us to read it out loud, and some kind of name that we can call you by would be nice.
Or call you.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
If you
send your phone number, and we'll prank. You know, we'll leave an amusing voicemail message.
Send your phone number. We'll include it in the article and say it on the podcast.
Yep. And tell everybody to spam it. Well, maybe not that. Well, yeah, probably.
Yep. So that is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and if we get enough good letters, we'll do listener mail again next week. All right, that's the end of the show, and thanks for listening. This has been Greg, James, John, and Johnny, and we'll see you next week.
Later.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Stealth balling.